Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jer Hamatash, and author of the recent collection, You Know It's True. My fourth and final collection, you should check it out. I also am the author of You Shall Know Never Know Security and a bunch of other collections. Why don't you check them out sometime, huh?
I did when they came out.
Well, I didn't mean you.
Oh,
I meant
okay.
The global you.
Oh, the royal you?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's me, Derek Sotek, because I guess I'm not getting introduced this episode.
You know
I
who the fuck we are, Derek.
A couple books on nachos and the William Hopoxton role-playing game Gracies Are Dreaming of My Death, all available at nachonomics.com. You should check them out sometime. Not you, JR. The royal you.
I bought them, motherfucker. Oh, no, actually.
Did you?
No, you sent them to me for free, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
Benefits of the show, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, as some of our listeners might know, what we've been deciding to do recently is, you know, make life a little bit easier for us. Load up on some, so we're getting two movies per episode instead of one. And we're deciding to start actually watching some movies we actually wanted to see outside of the show. Whereas
what
before,
a crazy notion, right?
We would theme episodes around shit that would make us watch human trash and garbage. Now we're trying to go at least for a little bit of killing two birds with one stone to reinvigorate our interests by watching movies we actually have an interest in seeing. So these two films that for this week are Derek's picks. And Derek's, why did you want to pick these films?
Because I heard they were good.
Is that literally
it? So
here
we are. That's it.
Okay, where'd you hear they were good from?
The internet.
The internet.
Right here, all things are good. Like, I don't get personal recommendations from anybody anymore. Who would do that?
Wait, so was it any particular website, or just like...
See, I don't even remember anymore. This is how long ago this was. I mean, these are new movies, but not, like, new movies. So, probably sometime in the past year, someone said something about them.
Oh, I thought you were just going to leave it at sometime in the past.
No.
I would say. Yes, I'm sure it was not... At the present or in the future.
Yep, no, 75 years ago, an old man told me, these are the movies you want to watch out for. I'm also 75 years old. They told it to a baby.
I mean, they do both have very positive Rotten Tomatoes scores. So let's take it away first with His House, which was the first full-length film.
Wait, whose house?
His House.
Okay, whose house?
The global his.
Okay.
Actually, no.
I feel like that's a rap song I might be referencing, but I don't know enough to go deeper into this reference.
Well, keep going with Derek. You might uncover some gold here.
Uh-huh.
It's the first full-length film of writer-director Remy Weeks, who before made this short films and commercials, including one called Tickle Monster that you can actually find online, and I think kind of shares a little bit of similarities in appearance with the ghost that features in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually... So both of these movies are on Netflix. And when I was watching this movie, I was thinking, man, I don't fucking ever use Netflix anymore. How'd that happen?
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I was like, what? I was like checking out the landscape of Netflix. I was like, what a barren wasteland. But I wonder how that happened. Like, what... They were the shit back in the day.
Yeah, they started the streaming craze and then haven't really revolutionized it, unlike all these other up-and-coming companies who gotta, you know, come in big and make a big splashy scene so people are interested in them.
As 50 Cent would have said, you was the man back in high school. And then other stuff in that song, Wanksta.
Okay. Candy Stick, I got it.
Well, I think it's Candy Shop, you fucking loser.
Oh, I don't got it.
So, yeah, I mean, I was a big Netflix fan from back in the day when they had the huge library of DVDs. But
yeah.
I guess they haven't... I mean, I guess these are two of their acquisitions, right? These are two Netflix exclusives, so...
Yep.
I would say they're doing all right on 50% of them.
Yeah, one was a very good acquisition, one was so-so.
I thought one was quite bad, but we'll get to that one later. So this one, His House. I walked in with pretty low expectations.
I guess we know which one the bad one is, then.
Well, it's not also probably not a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I walked in with those pretty low expectations, because here's a movie about South Sudanese refugees in England. I just imagined the movie was going to be a bunch of white British people surrounding their house, yelling, "This ain't your country, and this ain't your house!" And then, you know, the refugees stealing themselves for battle and yelling, "This is my house!"
That was His House.
That's about how the movie was kind of promoted, I would say. I don't know if you see the trailers or anything at all. Or you read...
I went into this totally cold, didn't know a thing about
it. If you read some of the commentary about the movie, they really to discuss the refugee angle as kind of like the horrors of the refugee experience, which, I mean, hey, maybe I'm just cold and callous inside, but I thought people treated them actually pretty well for the most part.
I think that's something that we can get into, because there is an interesting angle to that, I think.
Yeah, there. I know what you're going to talk about there. But it wasn't... I thought the movie was going to be kind of more of a racial grievance film in the way of Get Out or Antebellum or Kill All the Ghost Faces.
The bad version of this film is they come to England... Everyone hates them in England, and there's a racist ghost in the house who hates them too.
Yeah, I feel like this ghost was a general application. It wasn't a racist ghost.
Yeah, he's just, you know, a ghost.
It was an African ghost.
Mm-hmm. Well, is it really even a ghost?
Yeah, we'll get into that. The fact that the movie also has a 100% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 113 reviews and was technically ranked as the highest rated horror movie on Rotten Tomatoes also didn't help, because I thought this would kind of reveal more of the predilections of the reviewers and the quality of the movie. It has a 6.5 on IMDb, based about 29,000 reviews, which is pretty good for a horror movie, and a 75% user score on Rotten Tomatoes, based on 500-plus ratings, which is also pretty solid. Although right off the bat, I noticed that all the actors are Nigerian-British, and I just thought they couldn't find any South Sudanese refugees to fill these roles. The lack of representation is real. Yeah, so the description about the horrors of the refugee experience that the kind of is all surrounding this film and any of the commentary you read online kind of distorts or undersells the film. I think it's more of a story of just like guilt, revenge, and remorse that I guess is, you know, of general application. So Derek, take it away.
We get a flashback of the family leaving Sudan. They, you know, are trying to
South
escape.
South Sudan, Derek. They're different countries, motherfucker.
Oh, no.
I think that's why there's a war about it.
I'm getting canceled now for not knowing that. So they get in a car, and then they get in a boat, and then we assume everything's going to go okay, because every tale we hear of a boat traveling with 50 people on it always goes well. Oh, surprise, surprise. It doesn't go well. The ship sinks. And I like they don't, like, show... the ship sinking. It's just kind of they're on this boat, and then it cuts to horrible storm, everyone in the water, like, all right, this is a pretty clever way to do it. This is all flashback. We cut to a father or a husband and wife in a detention center in England somewhere, I'm not sure. They're trying to get temporary asylum. We get how this goes. They go into the bureaucracy, and they're like, all right, you can stay, but, you know, you gotta stay in this house. You can't work. You get a stipend. And it seems very much like this is a scenario. All these people are looking for their uncle's will, but the uncle says, if you want the money, you gotta stay in his house overnight because it's haunted. Otherwise, you don't get a penny. So that's your setup here.
I mean, also hearing, hey, you can't work, you can't leave, you have to stay in the house. Hook them up with a fucking PS5, and that sounds
yeah, like, I mean, what are you doing?
Sounds like a Derek weekend right there.
We're gonna give you £78. That's $150 a week. That wouldn't be too bad if you got a house already.
Yeah, they're paying for the living expenses. Not bad.
Yeah. So they get dropped off at this house with their case manager, who's the third most popular recent Doctor Who. And the house is garbage, but I mean, it's a free house, so not
it's
bad.
It's a big house, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's the comment later on for, I guess, England or London in particular, that everyone's like, oh, your house is bigger than our house. So there's a little tension there, too. But this house is also kind of garbage.
Yeah, I thought there would be a twist where, when I still thought this was going to be a garbage racial grievance movie, where it was going to be like, we gave you a big house, but that's because it's haunted and we give it to the refugees. We don't like to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But instead it was just like, oh no, it's actually just a big house.
Yeah, I was wondering if they're going to go with, oh yeah, we know everyone who stays in this house has been complaints about being haunted, but we kind of just stick people there to get them to go back home if they don't want to follow the rules. But nope. Wisely avoided that.
Yeah.
The first night, the dad's having what we think are flashbacks. And maybe they are, but since we know this is a ghost story, we know that, A, this flashback is turning into ghost stuff because there's something in the walls of this house, because the walls are ripped open in some places because of the rot that's going on in there, the black mold, whatever's going on. It's a bad house. You don't want to live there. Although they do, so what are you going to do? The next day, the guy goes out in the neighborhood, and, you know, he's walking around, and he goes by a church, and the guy's like, oh, are you one of them refugees? And we think, oh boy, this is going to take a racist turn, now's the turn. And then it turns out, oh no, he just wants him to come in because he's got some stuff for him, and they all sit around and watch some football known as soccer to us Americans, and they sing a song about some footballer, which, I don't know, it's the power of love, I suppose.
Yeah, they're getting along.
The guy's trying to acclimate, and he seems like he's doing that, but the second night, oh, even more ghosts come out of the wall. He walks downstairs, and, like, this big slimy piece of wallpaper comes down, and there's a wet-looking gross hole full of black mold and stuff, and there's a rope in there, and he's pulling it, and the ghosts come out. Scary stuff. The wife also starts...
You reach into a dark wire in a wall, you just gotta pull it out.
Just keep yanking it out when it's covered in seaweed and gross stuff.
This being a movie about, you know, acculturation and fitting in, I noticed these African witch ghosts fit in with our Western concept of witch ghosts by doing nothing but fucking around with light switches and making sounds in the walls.
Yeah, because all these ghosts are master electricians, too.
I mean, they have nothing better to do. That's the first thing I always think about, like, these ghosts have nothing better to do but make spooky noises. Come on, get to the show already.
Yeah, I mean, presumably these are not day one ghosts. Probably day one you gotta, like, learn to physically manifest stuff, so perhaps spooky noise is all you can do. But this ghost, this night witch, as we will find out, seems to have been around a while.
And also, so, he sees an arm coming out of the wall. Wouldn't he be extraordinarily concerned that you saw an arm come out of the wall?
One would think so. I think at this point, I don't know if he is sure that it's a ghost or just weird flashbacks or trauma or something like that, because the scene after this, the wife goes downstairs and opens a closet door, and the closet just shows the truck they got on full of now dead refugees, and she's like, well, I don't think this is a ghost, this is just some trauma, so she seems to be okay with that.
At any point, whether it be ghost or trauma, I start visually seeing fucked up shit in front of me. It's time to make
You should be concerned to some degree, whether a ghost or you manifesting hallucinations.
I mean, it's time to get serious about whatever this is.
Yeah, go see a doctor or something. The wife goes to the clinic the next day. She gets lost going through the sketchy neighborhood they live in. There's a lot of points up until this where white people are interacting with them, and you're not sure if it's going to take a racist turn or not, and it doesn't. And I thought that was pretty clever, like, because just that is a good way to show their apprehension of, I'm a stranger in a new place. From what I've heard, no one's going to like me here. So every interaction I have with somebody, I'm concerned whether it's going to be racial animus towards me.
Yeah.
But it might not always be. And I think the film does a very good job doing that up until now. And later on, it will do that. But at this point, she goes into a group of black British kids, and they basically just treat her like shit and tell her to go home.
Yeah.
Like, well, okay.
At first, you can't tell whether they're going to try and help her or not.
Yeah.
But then it's obvious they're all giving her different advice intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tell her to go back to Africa.
Yeah.
Which is a nice difference from the evil expected honky stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could still hate honkies, but the movie doesn't give us the reason to yet.
I think this scene and one part later, the twist later, I think are the only two weak points of this film.
Oh, wait. You mean this scene where she's lost in the maze?
No. The scene where they're racist towards her.
Oh, why was that weak?
I mean, just because it's like, all right, if you just made it ambiguous the whole time, I think that would have been the better angle for the course of the film rather than, oh, no, now it's nothing. Like, I get that, hey, it's the, she sees the black kids and think that she'll be safe talking to them as opposed to the white kids she walks by, and it turns out they're not. Like, I guess that's interesting, but I think it would have been more so if just the entire film was ambiguous, whether people actually did not like them or did.
Well, I got the impression that these kids were no good nicks to begin with.
Yeah, true. I mean, any kids dancing around a bicycle in the middle of a burned out, I don't know, apartment complex.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts.
See, I thought it was kind of interesting to show a tension between the black British and the Africanized British.
Yeah, no, I think that's what makes this scene okay. Like, I'm on the fence, like, all right, this is a way you could have gone. I think it's fine, but I think it would have been better if it wasn't.
I also thought it was interesting, that visually interesting, how the way she gets lost in the maze of side streets.
Yeah.
Kind of a bit like, I think this was a scene that was directly influenced by The Shining and the appearance of the the carpeting in the hotel rooms.
Oh, I thought it was the reference by Spider Labyrinth, where they just get lost in that town for like 10 minutes straight.
I don't think anyone has ever referenced or thought of Spider Labyrinth, including the directors and cast of that movie.
Quite possibly so. She finally makes it to the clinic, and the white doctor lady like compliments on her on her dead daughter's necklace that she's wearing, and is like, "Oh, you have all these ritualized scars. They look adorable." And the lady's like, "Hey, you know why these got these? Because I carved them in myself after I saw my family get butchered." And boom, I put that lady right in her place.
Yeah, and she also said she would like she carved in the different, I guess, insignias of the different tribes, so they wouldn't know which one she belonged to, so they wouldn't kill her.
Mm-hmm. Or they could go, I mean, if you're wearing a blue bandana and a red bandana and walking through Crips and Blood territory, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, you must be cool with both of us.
It's we'll also the problem is it turns into a purple bandana, and then you're in a whole world of hurt. And yeah, you look silly.
The banana boys come after you. Yeah. But you don't want that.
You don't want anyone who refers to themselves as bananas coming after you.
The wife gets home and, you know, looks at the jacked up walls and, you know, sees a girl peeing in the backyard. So, again, great neighborhood they're living in. Some peaches fall in the kitchen. One of them rolls into one of the holes in the wall and the lady's going to pick it up. And a ghost in the wall is like, leave it or don't. So, hey, when there's a ghost in your wall who wants peaches, can they really be that bad? They're looking after themselves.
It's true.
If they were like, give me a cheeseburger, you're like, this ghost is no good. Its cholesterol's going to be off the charts.
You also don't want the peach just lying there rotting. At least you're just getting rid of it.
Yeah, it'd be no good. I guess that bird's probably not going to eat that peach either.
Is it at this point where she mentions the Apeth, the Night Witch, or does that come up later?
It's a little bit later. So yeah, the man gets home and he's like, oh, I'm acclimating. This is great. It's great we're living here. Fantastic. She's got dinner there, and she's like, hey, there's a night witch living in my wall, an Apeth. And it's, I guess, convenient that the story that she, like, the myth she's able to tell is exactly what's going on. But, you know, sure, let's go with that.
I thought that was a little bit strange, so that she talks about this South Sudanese legend of the Apeth, a night witch. It's kind of like a parallel about a man who lives in the house, who stole from somebody, and now he gets punished by the night witch that lives in his house. But I was kind of wondering if it's like, how well known a piece of folklore is this in South Sudan? Is this like the equivalent of someone being like, Santa Claus, what's that?
It's more like, oh, I stole this from the Mothman, and now the Mothman's coming after me.
Yeah, not a lot of people know the Mothman. Although you can kind of
a little deeper cut.
You can kind of figure out what the Mothman is with the name.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a man who's also a moth?
I mean, I think from Night Witch, we figure out what it is, too.
There's no Richard
Gere. But it's kind of a ghost, and not really witchy-looking, so whatever. It has no penis, though, so maybe that's why it's a man. So the wife thinks that the daughter's still alive. The man's like, no, she died. And she's like, you're a liar. So we're building up a little bit of tension there.
I also don't know how would they think she's alive if she fell into the fucking sea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're just assuming that she's dead. They don't know, but I think it's a fair assumption to guess that perhaps she's not.
You know how in a ghost film or like a haunting, everyone's always like, well, why don't they just leave the house?
Mm-hmm.
Here it's like, you're not even paying a fucking mortgage. Why don't you leave the house?
No, they can't leave. They got to sign this house. That's what the guy said at the beginning.
Yeah, but would you rather have your life or your fucking citizenship?
Well, I mean, we're going to get to that in a sec, so let's slow a roll here. Dad's fixing the house again at night, so maybe the nighttime's not the time to fix this house if ghosts are going to come out of walls. And he's attacked by some spirits. He decides, all right, we got to burn all our old belongings to symbolically cleanse ourselves of our past, to get along our new Britishness, and to get rid of this witch. The mother's, of course, hey, don't burn my daughter's necklace that I'm wearing. And he's like, nope, got to do it. So they have a little barbecue out in the back.
And I'm just like, damn, they have a fucking backyard. Jealous.
Yeah, full of teenage girl urine. Can you imagine how that's going to smell on a hot day?
That burns out quickly.
Mm.
And in some cultures, that's a prized possession.
Oh. Dad goes to, I don't know, some kind of store the next day and looks on the wall and sees, like, whatever model they have picture and whatever clothing he's wearing and decides, that's the exact clothing I'm going to buy, which I thought was pretty clever as a way to show. Look how acclimating I'm trying to get. He's also followed by, I mean, this part goes back to the, are they being stereotyped or they're not, where he walks in and there's a guy we know as the, like, store detective who sees him come in and starts following him around, and then that's just, like, immediately dropped, which in a lesser movie would seem sloppy, but I think goes to show, like, hey, is this racist, is this not racist, they kind of keep it ambiguous.
I thought it was a nice little subtle touch, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also mentioned later that he stinks like shit, so maybe the guy was like, I gotta follow that stinky guy.
As one does.
Yeah.
You know, he goes home and tries to fix all the wiring, and by fixing the wiring, he just rips it out of the walls and puts it on the outside of the walls. I guess the implication is here that if the wiring is in the walls, the ghosts can leave it intact and yet manipulate it. But if you can see where the wire goes from the switch to the lights, the ghost can't get at it?
Yeah, I didn't really exactly understand.
Yeah, like, I see the logic behind it, I just don't understand why that's a thing, but sure, okay, I'll buy it at that point. Him and his wife are having dinner, you know, talk about the Night Witch again, or she's talking to the Night Witch that he can't see about solving this problem. Dad's like, nope, we're staying, this is it. He's eating at a table, and we kind of pan out and see that the, in one of the more interesting shots, they kind of do this a couple times, where the kitchen, when they zoom out, is him in the sea, and, you know, oh, this is where the daughter drowned to bring back that trauma, and then we get back to the present. Bunch of more ghosts come out, and they seem to only work when the light is off.
Yeah, I was going to say, these African ghosts are pretty ineffectual to be defeated by electricity.
Yeah, you flip on the light, and the ghosts go away, but if you turn it off, then all the ghosts can see you, except for the daughter ghost, who can operate with or without the light being on.
And they also quite conveniently cannot physically seem to hurt anybody.
Yes, as we will be find out more explicitly.
I think we can kind of figure that out now because they kind of just run around and don't actually hurt anybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if the ghosts... It seems... No, the ghosts can hurt people because one slashes at him with a knife, which makes the part with the knife... Like, somewhat later on, we're going to find that the Night Witch wants him to kill himself, but the Night Witch cannot physically hurt people. But the ghosts that the manifest with the Night Witch can hurt people.
But they don't hurt him.
But one of them slashes him with a knife.
The knife can hurt people.
Oh, okay. So they can... All right. Okay. Whatever. Mr. Pedant. At this point, the dad's like, all right, maybe we gotta get out of this house. He goes to see Doctor Who again and basically is told that, hey, you make a fuss around here. People aren't gonna think you're acclimating well. That's gonna raise a lot of questions. And this is the point where they, there's a couple people in the office, and when they hear him complaining about the house, they're like, dude, your house is bigger than ours. What are you complaining about?
I don't really get why they think moving out of the house would do anything. Like, isn't it obvious they're the ones being haunted? It's not like the house is haunted.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the wife realizes this, but the husband does not.
But you mean this fucking ghost witch was able to follow them across the sea from South Sudan, but can't make it a few extra blocks? They're like, no, I'm a Manchester ghost. I ain't going to Birmingham.
Yep, I'm a Liverpoodlian ghost. Yeah. That's how this works. Yeah, he's acting really weird. And they're like, oh, there's rats here. And then Doctor Who's like, but you want to move somewhere else where there's also going to be rats and you're fine with that? Seems suspicious. And the dad's like, laughing weirdly and then runs off. And yeah. Surprise, surprise, when you act like a weirdo, people want to check up on what's exactly going on. So Doctor Who and one of his buddies from the whatever location place come, and they see that the house has been all smashed up inside, and like, this isn't good, we gotta report this. And then the wife's like, oh, it wasn't rats, it was witches.
Yeah,
it
doesn't really
give me a good chuckle.
That doesn't really help them.
No, definitely, definitely not.
No.
So they're like, all right, we'll let slide this one time because you say you're gonna fix it up, but we're gonna come back later, and if it's not all fixed up, we're gonna have some talking to do. They take off. Seems like things may be okay at this point. Still a little fuzzy. The wife wants to go back home and, you know, deal with this witch thing. And the dad's like, nope, we live here now. We're gonna take care of this witch problem ourselves. And he takes off all the latches and smashes out the latches on the window. So now they're kind of physically trapped in the house, which is something the Night Witch warned them about earlier. That night, the Night Witch comes again and talks to the dad. And he's like, hey, if you kill yourself, you can have your daughter back. And the... As we will find out in the twist later, the dad doesn't really seem to care about this at all.
Yeah, he could have just revealed it by now by saying, stupid ghost, it's not even my daughter.
Spoilers. Yeah, so because the dad's like, oh, you can't just kill me yourself? Well, obviously you can't hurt me at all, so why would I do anything? And the ghost was like, oh, drop the mic. I can't physically hurt you, but I'm going to mentally hurt you. And he shoots him back to being in the middle of the ocean and, like, kind of holds his arms back and holds his eyes open and makes the dad watch the girl come out of the sea and puke up an octopus. Like, oh, well played, spooky ghost. You can figure out the tricks of this. The wife tries to escape while the dad's kind of in this trance and jumps out the window, but it turns out that when she does, that just kind of brings her back to Africa. And
you know, it seems Nigel like, Farage is loving that scene.
I'm sure. She's walking around and kind of meets up her old friends, and then her friends, she's like, oh, this must be a dream, right? And the friend's like, yeah, it is, but if you just kill your husband, then you can have your daughter back. And she's like, oh, okay. Turns out this is a flashback to her friends getting massacred, which was the impetus for them trying to leave. She leaves the room, comes back, everyone's dead. The husband comes in, they take off, and we see this is the beginning of their journey trying to escape as refugees, which seems like it was like 3 weeks before they moved to England, but I guess the time isn't really weird. But as we find out, they're trying to leave, and they're trying to get on a bus, and they like, oh, sorry, the bus is full up, can't have any more refugees, and they just grab a child out of the crowd, or the husband grabs a child out of the crowd, is like, oh, hey, here's our kid, you gotta let us on, because we got a kid. The lady on the bus is like, all right, fine, you three can get on. They do. Oh, turns out the mother of this child was outside the window and was just kind of screaming at them for, you know, abducting their child.
I kind of feel like, what the fuck was the mother doing? Like, was she, like, waiting online at Shake Shack? They're fucking rebels coming down with the machine guns and...
She was waiting in line to get on the bus.
No, but the daughter and the daughter and the mother were separated.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have your daughter next to you.
Online in line conference, calling back to episode 2.
Episode 3, please.
Oh,
but I mean, you don't have a more attentive eye on your daughter when there are fucking rebels coming at you. That's when you decide to go get a malted shake somewhere at the fucking convenience store or something.
Well, obviously, she deserves to be abducted, then.
I'm not saying she deserves to be abducted, but I think when there's people coming to assess, murder you, you stick a little bit closer to your child.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, she kind of had to come, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it turns out this child they've been acting like through the entire film was their real daughter, was just someone they abducted to kind of con their way onto the thing to escape. While this has been 3 weeks, they seem to have forgotten that this was not their real daughter.
I don't know if they forgot it or that the movie just conveniently neglects to mention it. Or
I mean, like, through the entire thing, they act like she's their actual daughter, and the mother or the wife tells the doctor earlier, oh, yeah, it was my daughter's necklace. So, like, why?
Well, what's she supposed to say? Oh, it was the girl we abducted to get on the boat.
Yeah, you could have just not said anything, too. Yeah, and I guess they do kind of throw in a bit here, like, oh, hey, I guess we've abducted you as a child now, so now we're kind of going to act parental, and the mother or the wife's like, okay, I'm going to take care of you now. So there does seem to be the bonding, at least, here. Like, all right, we're stuck with you now, so we're going to make the best of this by taking care of you.
Presumably, the same thing would have happened. I mean, it's not like they caused the boat to sink. Say she True. Got on the boat with her mother, they would have drowned anyway.
Yeah, and was the mother a night witch, we are supposed to say? Because from the story they tell earlier, the reason that the night witch comes after that guy is because the guy stole from the night witch itself.
Maybe the daughter's a night witch.
No, because the daughter dies. So the daughter's got to belong to a night witch.
Well, then it's good they stole her. She was there rescuing her from a witch.
Hey, what, a night witch can't have kids too?
No.
I don't know about that. Yeah, so the night witch is like, hey, you kill your husband, you can have your daughter back. And the lady's like, okay, my daughter, who's definitely not my daughter, I would love this. That'd be great.
It's a pretty sweet deal for her. She gets out of South Sudan into England. She gets to kill her husband. She gets to be redeemed morally. She gets passage to the UK while her husband had to do all the dirty work.
I mean, presumably if you murder someone, you don't get to become a citizen. They just lock you up.
Unless you kill a refugee, and then they're like, all right, you get citizenship because you killed a refugee we didn't like.
All right, Nigel Farage, we gotcha. So she goes back, her and the husband are in the house, and the knife's sitting on the table, and she's like, oh, maybe I should kill him. But before she can do that, the husband takes the knife, stab himself in the arm, and is like, well, I cut myself open, now the night witch is gonna come. And the night witch burrows out of the floor, and, you know, starts to, he sticks his hand inside the guy's open wound, and appears to be, like, digging in under his skin, which is a pretty cool effect. And I'm wondering if it's like the Night Witch needs to jump into a body to manifest, if that's what the purpose of this, or just the way it kills people, is it like burrows into them and rips off their skin or something? I don't know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
The wife's looking on at this, and she's like, oh, okay. And then, you know, her ghost daughter comes and like holds her hand, and then we kind of get like, oh, wait, maybe I should not get my husband killed by this ghost and have a ghost daughter. So she grabs the knife and slits the Night Witch's throat, which I wasn't aware the Night Fist was like something that could be killed by having his throat slit, but sure.
Yeah, kill a lot of things. That's a big kind of twist that we don't really know, that this ghost witch could just be stabbed and die.
Mm-hmm.
Which they could have done presumably at any other time before that.
Yeah, well, I guess it doesn't manifest. It's all just the ghost previously, so I don't know why, what the
deal. I wonder if they just found themselves stuck and they were just like, how do we write ourselves out of this? And like, oh, why don't we just have it so you can just stab it?
Yeah, I mean, slitting its throat kills a lot of things. Why not a Night Witch?
What I was thinking, this witch, why ain't this witch tormenting the tribesmen who was like gutting people down back in the South Sudan?
Well, they weren't doing anything. They like
really punching the Night Witch. Punching people down by attacking this family. Why not attack all the people murdering each other?
Because they weren't murdering Night Witch property.
Yeah, I mean, so the Night Witch only. You have all these superpowers. Why don't you use them for good?
Because not a night angel. It's a Night Witch. It does bad things.
But I mean, come on. You're attacking these two innocent people. Not innocent, but these two powerless individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they stole from a Night Witch.
Meanwhile, you're letting tribal warfare go on back there.
No, because it wasn't Night Witch related.
Well, maybe
there's a lot of bad things in the world. The Night Witch can't solve all the problems.
Maybe one of those tribesmen could accidentally shoot a Night Witch, and these fucking problems could be solved back home.
Well, I guess you could shoot a Night Witch, right?
Yeah.
How many Night Witches are there? I guess that's another question that's not answered here. Anyhow, kill the Night Witch. The next day or a couple of days later, Doctor Who and, some other officials show up, and they're like, well, we're going to take pictures of this house and see what's going on, and we see that our couple have cleaned up the area some, they filled in all the holes and look, they're starting to paint, and they've covered up the hole in the floor of their house that the Night Witch came out of with the carpets. So seems like they're doing all right.
Yeah, and they say, oh, we killed the witch, and everyone chuckles, and they're like, full citizenship immediately.
I had a good laugh about that, and when Doctor Who's like, hey, is that witch still bothering you? And the wife's like, no, we killed it. That was pretty good. I can't really tell if Doctor Who's gunning for him to, like, succeed, because he seems to leave with a smile. So. It does seem that the other two people are not particularly enamored by them, despite the repairs they've done to the house. So I guess we are left with, hey, are they going to be able to stay, or are they not going to be able to stay?
So, I mean,
what do you think?
They got away with child abducting, allowing the kid to drown at sea, scamming his way into the UK. They make a few mournful speeches. The girl doesn't come back. And they're just like, hey, it worked out pretty well for us.
Yep.
I mean, at the end, they kind of got away with it.
Maybe. Like, I don't know if we are to take, by the end of this, that they are going to become citizens.
Well, I mean, the ghosts look at them angrily and mournfully. But
they're ghosts. What else are they going to do?
But they're like, hey, buddy, we're here, and you're in the fucking distant ether world. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling they're going to stay, because their main caseworker likes them.
Yeah, but he's like, well, it's not me you got to convince. Which seems to be the tone of all the bureaucracy. It's like, listen, whatever you say, it's not up to me. It's passing the buck up the chain to somebody else. Because the guy at the beginning, they're like, oh, hey, we're good people. And he's like, whether you're good people or not, I'm not the one you got to convince here.
I liked the movie. I thought it was well made, and it was interesting. It was quite interesting compared to the
other. The only real problem I had with it was the conveniently the daughter reveal. That, like, oh, hey, we know they're not the daughter, but we're going to, like, for no reason other than to confuse us as the watchers.
I mean, I also had, I guess, a problem with the first third act of just, like, the kind of stereotypical fake scares.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, like, there's a bird that flies down the chimney. There's your typical animal noise scares. I mean, it's like, fuck, even refugees can't escape from...
sad tropes.
Yeah, I mean, and there's just the whole shtick with the electricity and the ghosts can't actually harm anybody. So there's a fair amount of just like, not filler scenes, but scenes that don't move the movie forward.
Uh-huh.
But I thought it was quite psychologically interesting, and it was a nice, interesting to see a different addition to the ghost lore.
Yeah.
A little too much was concealed about the Night Witch in the sense of like, if we had learned earlier that you could just stab it and it would die, then like, well, that would take away some of the mystery and suspense of it.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed a little bit to me of a way of writing themselves out of a problem. But I did like the movie. I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, and this is one kind of our going back to our, would we show this to a normal person? Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, my mother would like this movie, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good movie. I could understand why it has the ratings it does. Although, to call it the best horror movie of 2020 is a bit... I mean,
you think there's a better movie of 2020?
Well, what I would say, I guess, to a horror fan is they should expect that there's literally no body count. It's not your typical horror movie of, like...
I mean, there's a whole boat of refugees.
Yeah, but they're dead before the fucking movie even starts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that whole, you know, genocide in South Sudan. Yeah. Does not count?
All right, then.
Isn't that the real horror?
All right there, Mother Teresa. You were calling it Sudan before, and now you're all...
Because I didn't know. Now I've learned. I'm improving myself.
I mean, some could say this is more of just like a drama with supernatural trappings.
But I mean, that kind of goes into how pedantic do you want to be with all your labeling of horror and
I want to be pedantic as possible.
Yeah, obviously.
But I liked it. I thought it was a good movie, and I would recommend it to others.
Yeah, I mean, when you see something that's like, oh, this is 100% rating, of course, take it with a grain of salt. I would not say this is 100%, but this is a very good movie.
I would say I think the trailers and advertising does it a disservice, because it makes it sound preachier and shittier than it is.
I didn't watch any of those. That's the way to go. I mean, really, I think the older I get for a movie that is not just like this is something I'll see in the theater, which... Really, I think when I say I'm going to see something in the theater, I know it's going to be just like a popcorn film. It's kind of meh. Like, it is rare that anything in the theater anymore is actually a film that I'm going to be like, I'm surprised. This was interesting.
Yeah, that's true. So. Speaking of movies that are disappointing, though, Block Island Sound, did you know this movie also has pretty good professional reviews, even though it sucked? Did you notice that, Derek?
I did not.
I mean, it makes me retroactively appreciate the 2007 film Cthulhu.
There was some certain vibes of that.
Yeah, this has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 30 professional reviews, although many of those professional reviews are of dubious origin.
Let me guess, websites of particularly names that have people who have no real credentials reviewing it?
Do I care what We Have a Hulk magazine has to say about this? Oh yeah, if it has been mentioned, we're talking about the Block Island Sound now. Mm-hmm. It has
not the body of water known as the Block Island Sound, the film Block Island Sound.
Although I have a feeling the film's named after the water.
Oh, it makes sense now. It's like a double entendre without the sexual connotation.
This movie did have a 53% user score based on about 100 ratings, which makes me always think, when you are suspicious of the professional reviews, read the comments sections.
No, never read the comments. That's the worst idea.
No, it's a good idea, because you're going to say, hey, it's gonna puncture a hole in the aura of the film when you see the proletariats point out what the real problems in the movie are. Mm-hmm. Whereas his house actually had a 75% or so from the user score. You think, hey, that's a pretty good score for a horror movie. I imagine most of the negative reviews from users of this movie are some combination of slow, boring, and gay. Because, you know, they like saying gay in anything.
Yeah, there's always some, you know, threatening homosexual reference thrown in there, too.
I did like the top IMDb review. Somehow slow and boring in a bad way. Unlike those movies that are slow and boring in a satisfying way. Like those.
Yeah, I mean, this is no Berlin Alexanderplatz, for sure.
Like those Norwegian slow TV videos of, like, you know, icicles forming or something. So I guess a few things that make me kind of partial to the movie before I even watched it. So it's made by Rhode Island natives Kevin and Matt McManus, and it actually takes place in Rhode Island, which is a state I have a very soft spot for.
Literally the first scene, they're sitting there drinking some Gansett, and at that point I'm like, alright Phil, I'm in so far.
They were producers and writers on that show American Vandal, which made me chuckle if you ever saw that show.
I have not, but I've heard it's pretty funny.
There's like not much of any humor in this movie though, which I was a little bit disappointed at. And also the fisherman father they have in here is properly grizzled.
Yeah, he is. If you're looking for someone with the Innsmouth look, this is the guy.
They made another independent non-horror movie in 2012 called The Funeral Kings, and they were also producers on Cobra Kai, which I've not seen since I never even saw The Karate Kid. There's no point now because I'm an adult. And also nostalgia is an obscuring poison.
That's true. It's toxic, certainly. But Cobra Kai is pretty good for the first season, at least.
Does pretty good mean pretty good for a reboot of The Karate Kid, or does it actually mean pretty good?
No, it kind of like takes the tropes of the film and subverts them in an interesting way. And then the subsequent seasons kind of like, oh, we had one clever idea, now we're just going to keep redoing this over and over again, and it goes downhill.
So I could actually summarize this movie extraordinarily quickly if I wanted to, which I might end up doing. But so basically, the movie summed up, you know, grizzly-looking fisherman type Tom wakes up all bewildered and he begins acting weird. He has a son who lives with him and seems to not work or do anything and be just kind of an asshole.
The son I also thought was the one of the main guys from the 5 Second Film series, if you watched any of those back in the day.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, they are films that are 5 seconds long.
Are they good?
Basically, you watch them on YouTube and you have some chuckles because they're 5 seconds.
I mean, is it just punchline?
I mean, pretty much.
Okay. I'll check it out.
I'd recommend Olivia Taylor Dudley's in it, your favorite.
5 seconds. I need more than
and
five.
And Peter Stormare, who's also a guy that I enjoy seeing in things.
So how many of these movies are there?
Oh, like 1,000.
I mean, do I just look up Olivia Dudley 5 Second Film?
Yeah, you could probably do that. Look it up right now. You can cut this out. So. Oh, do you? I think not.
No, I don't. I mean, that's why
I think you probably have 3 seconds with Olivia Taylor Dudley.
That's why we have the reload feature on YouTube anyway. Just looking. Anyway, so what's the son's name? Do you remember? No. Okay. So the son.
Yeah, I don't remember what anyone's name in any of these movies are. As you may have noticed from calling them Doctor Who and husband and wife.
The son has a conspiracy theorist friend, Dale, who he doesn't like or get along with whatsoever, but still hangs out with him because he needs him in the movie. And Dale is in the movie, so he can just explain exactly what is happening at the very beginning of the movie. He's like, hey, do you know that there are creatures that can take over your brains? Like how toxoplasmosis parasites take over the brains of mice and make them not afraid of cats so they get eaten? Hey, I wonder if that's going to happen later in this movie.
That's kind of what happens.
I mean, isn't that exactly what happens?
I mean, sort of, I guess. I mean, there's not any worms or parasites in this that
well,
are doing
we don't know what brain, we don't know what they are.
Same concept. But like no, like that's a when they can pull that off at something like the Borderlands pre-sequel game has a scene at the very beginning where you talk to a crazy guy and he literally lays out the entire plot of the game, which you don't realize until the end of it. You're like, oh shit, that guy was right the whole time, which I like in retrospect. So I'll give it a little bit of credit for that.
Also, they did something similar to that in, what's that third Simon Pegg movie?
The one that nobody particularly likes.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. End of the World?
Yeah, something
The World's
like
End?
There we go, The World's End. They kind of summarize exactly what's going to happen in the rest of the movie via metaphor about the bars they're going to go to.
Yeah, they do that in Shaun of the Dead, too.
I was also wondering, what the fuck is a pre-sequel?
It takes place between Borderlands 1 and Borderlands 2.
Gotcha.
So it's a prequel and a sequel.
So the son, so the fisherman just starts acting weirder and weirder, like he's possessed by something.
Well, we hear this Block Island sound, it kind of sounds like a big frog, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing I didn't notice. It sounded like growly lions to me, which I didn't understand because if you're a monster or alien or whatever the fuck you're trying to be and you're acting conspicuous and your whole shtick is taking over people's brains, why would you make large growly noises whenever people are nearby?
Well, this is the part that's kind of weird, too. Like, I don't know how much of this is actually... if diegetic or non-diegetic. So basically, are the people in the film actually hearing this, or is this just meant for the audience and certain people in the film?
Well, no, because we'll get, they like, comment the... on the noises.
Yeah, sometimes they do, and then sometimes they don't. Because like when the kids go to the boat later on, the son can hear it, but the daughter can't hear it at that point.
Okay.
Or maybe the cop can't hear it and only the son can hear it, something like that. So it's not always, us as the audience always hear it, but the people on screen, not all of them always hear it when it's happening.
Counter question.
Okay.
Why would the noise that they may or may not be hearing sound like growly lions when they're sea-based creatures?
I mean, are they sea-based creatures?
Whatever type of creatures they are, why would it sound like a typical scary movie noise?
I mean, everything needs to sound like something.
But why do they always sound the same?
I mean, would you want your alien to sound like...
Yeah, actually, you know what? I do. It'd be a little bit more interesting than the typical fucking growly noises that they use in these movies.
I mean, I think you need... There is probably a happy medium between, hey, you want this to have a unique sound, and you want it to not sound fucking stupid.
I mean, make it more ambient. I mean...
And like a whickering horse or a laughing dandy is probably not the way to go.
To me, it just sounded like they turned the bass really low and then they like downloaded some audio file of a fucking lion stubbing its toe or some shit.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the opening to our podcast.
That's right. So the first third of the movie, and also I think the first third of most movies involving aquatic horror are roughly the same. You know, there's dead fish and there's birds appearing and a suggestion that things aren't right, you know.
I mean, again, is this aquatic horror? Because we get dead birds too, and the thing does not live in the sea.
I would say yes, it is aquatic horror because the horror arises from a body of water that they venture out into.
Okay.
And it uses a lot of the tropes of aquatic horror until maybe the last third when they're just like, why don't we just do the opposite of that? Or just make it stupid. So basically, you get the normal, like, hey, weird things are happening around here. They're dead fish, they're dead birds, we don't know what's going on. And fortunately, we have a conspiracy theorist character who can relate exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. In terms of other convenient coincidences, the son's name is Harry.
Okay.
Harry's sister works for the EPA. And she's
Harry's sister, the poor man's Mila Jovovich.
Who is she? I don't even know who the fuck she is.
The poor man's Mila Jovovich.
Why is she the poor man's Mila Jovovich?
Because she looks like Mila Jovovich. Okay. Jovovich?
Did you just pick a name you can't pronounce?
I mean, I did pick a name because she looks like her, but I also can't pronounce it. That's just a happy coincidence.
Harry's sister works for the EPA, and her job is to investigate these weird fish deaths that have been occurring around the Block Island Sound. So she could say things like, hey, we take out certain fish and study them so we can get a better understanding of how all the other fish live.
Yep, sometimes the fish die, sometimes they don't, but we're just doing it to help the fish.
So I prefer it in movies that I prefer when a movie that features a supernatural twist reflects real life as much as possible and not contrived coincidences. So here we already have two.
To be fair, it is reflecting the real life of looking after these fish.
Okay. Here are my two problems so far. We have a conspiracy theorist whose conspiracy theories seem to roughly approximate the themes of the movie, introduced at the beginning of the movie to tell us what's going to happen. And yeah, then
the real Chekhov's conspiracy theorist.
We have an EPA sister who's able to give exposition that if you're too fucking stupid to figure out the parallel between the movie and the exposition, they literally repeat it at the end of the movie. So it doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist to figure out that I guess there are some kind of either sea creatures or maybe aliens or whatever the fuck that act by mind controlling a person who then get them to go out there and feed them random shit, which seems like a highly inefficient way of getting food to mind control some drunk fishermen. So a few days later, they sail out and drop fucking cat food or ham and cheese sandwiches in the water.
We say feeding, but they are not. If you're to believe what the sister is saying about the comparison between what she's doing and what these aliens are doing. We'll call them aliens because that's basically what they seem to be. They're not eating them. They're just experimenting on them.
They're experimenting on fucking tuna fish casserole.
Yeah, you put your net in the water and you drag up and there's a bunch of different animals in there and you study them all.
Well, I'm just saying the other sea monsters like the Krakens must be laughing their asses at these fucking punk losers. So eventually the father ends up disappearing at sea, and then he's found dead in blackface, which is supposed to represent that he got bruised up and beaten while he was, like, down in the sea. But it looks like they just rubbed coal all over his face, and I thought it looked pretty fucking stupid. And, you know, they paid for that blackface makeup, so by God are they going to reuse it over and over by showing his son having hallucinations of his dead father reappearing and making burping noises.
Yeah, like, I would say the first third or half where it's just based around, hey, the father went disappearing, what's going on, is the better movie before they start explaining things and making it dumb.
Yeah, and also I did not like the son. I'll get to him in a second. But so then the middle third, I guess, starts following Harry, and you know, he gets kind of possessed or mind controlled or whatever it is. And he begins to be researching, you know, what might be happening around the island. So we get Google searches like, a lot of dead fish show up at beach. And the whole doodling on the maps about where the dead fish have been appearing. Mm-hmm. So now he's beginning to get hallucinations. He's accused of being a hothead drunk. It's basically, he does something stupid. Other people are like, hey, don't do stupid things. Why are you acting weird? And then he goes, hey, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
Yeah, he's not a sympathetic character.
Like, when his dad dies, he goes out during the funeral to get the food platters for the funeral at a grocery store. He gets in a weird haze and doesn't get them, and everybody is mad at him for not picking them up. But who plans on getting ham and cheese sandwiches as a spread at a funeral from a grocery store during the funeral?
Well, you've never been to a Rhode Island wake, have you?
I guess not, but I mean, everyone's like, what, you didn't get it? It's like, shouldn't you be, like, getting this the fucking night before? Weirdos. So here's, like, there's kind of a Mad Libs of all his dialogue that you could do. You could be like, listen, I wasn't drinking, okay? Hey, man, back off. Yeah. All right. Whatever. Hey, what the fuck do you mean by that? That's all his dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the aliens or whatever these things are. They make electronics act all weird and make the people they possess feel sick around electronics, which you think would also be a pretty silly side effect when you are creatures trying to remain inconspicuous in the modern world.
What are you going to do? If that's how you work, it's how you work.
I mean, I think I was infected while watching this movie. I was like, turn the TV off. Turn it off.
I mean, it is weird that they pull in a plot line from Better Call Saul into this much worse experience.
He's told that he might have a sickness of sorts to electronics that might be the result of nearby wind farms. And they suggest, hey, why don't you move off the island and move to Rhode Island mainland to get better and get farther away from these, you know, wind farms. And he's like, what the fuck, man? No, I was here first. You know, so it's like, wait, you can't move 20 minutes to improve your life? All right, dude.
I mean, is the film secretly Rhode Islanders being against the wind farms off the coast?
I don't think it has a position about anything.
Uh-huh.
So the next twist, I guess, so to say, is that, you know, he goes out to sea to bring them some roadkill while under his normal trance, and then all of a sudden things start floating up into space. So we begin to think, are these aliens or are these sea creatures, and is their boss move making things float up into space? And the mind control effects aren't really subtle. Like, you'd think you'd want to have this dude acting secretly if your trick is to get him to do what you want and, like, do these experiments on whatever he's bringing. But they're just like, hey, why don't you just kidnap your niece while everyone's awake and they can just watch you doing it? So he basically just kidnaps his niece in full view of everybody and brings her out to sea. But then he does his floating off into space shit and disappears. And then we get some voiceover from earlier in the movie about the EPA sister saying, we take a brave fish out of the water and study it, and then we can learn about the other fish. Derek, do you get it?
Oh, the fish.
That's like basically
they're alien scientists or some shit. It's the alien EPA.
He disappears, I guess, from floating off into space, and the sister looks for him, and they can't find him. He's gone. Why are these sea creatures wanting to study fucking roadkill? Who the fuck, who cares?
If we are to go by what they show us about, if we were to take this as the alien EPA, I mean, you're just going to
be the slowest fucking process these aliens could possibly do. They mind control one dumb idiot at a time and get them to throw in, like, pebbles and roadkill into the sea. Fucking roadkill gets into the sea naturally.
So your issue with this is more like, hey, why doesn't the EPA just levitate every creature out of the sea and fly it into their laboratories?
My issue as a movie is, like, nothing happens and it's boring.
And yeah, I mean, like, when I saw this was almost 2 hours long, I was less thrilled than when I saw that his house was 90 minutes long.
And it's also so, there's three acts, and in all aquatic-based horror, as I mentioned, the first third is always the same of, like, hey, there are weird phenomena, dead fish, dead birds, weird stuff's going on. And the second act is just like, hey, he's acting weird. Why don't we keep confronting him about acting weird? Why are you acting so weird? Fuck you, man. I ain't acting weird. I ain't doing shit. You should stop drinking. Fuck you. Where'd my beer go? That's the middle third. Then the last third is like, I guess, climax of him falling off the boat. And they're like, where'd he go? The end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that it would be whatever mystery they're trying to develop with these aliens would be ruined by any showing them or any further exposition or explanation, but I don't buy the premise also.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, that's if you have issues with it, you're gonna have issues with it. Like, what are they gonna do?
I mean, I would say I didn't enjoy the experience of watching it because I didn't like the characters and I didn't think it was believable and I think it was interesting. And it was also, it treated the audience like they were very stupid.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do you need a conspiracy theorist character to basically explain at the very outset hey, you hear about these things that take over people's minds and make them do shit they don't want to do? And it's like, oh, that's what happens in the movie. And then the EPA character, and then, oh, not even that, they go, the EPA sister goes and interviews someone else who supposedly had this other fear or phobia of technology, and he's like, no, that wasn't what it was. It was these aliens who were taking over my mind and making me do things I didn't want to do. It's like, okay. How many fucking times do you have to get this explained to us? We get it. It's not that hard. It's not rocket science.
A lot of forecasting here.
And it's not only is it but it's like, it's also the visuals or the, what we witness as the explanation isn't interesting. So basically, whenever he's being told by the aliens to do something, it's in the appearance of his father in the shitty, stupid makeup. And he like gurgles something that sounds like dog, bring a dog, daughter, bring a girl. And it's like, this is also isn't visually interesting. Yeah. It's not only is it visually interesting, it's like the aliens' experience of humans is by watching shitty horror movies. So this is how they communicate their messages to us.
Yeah, I mean, you do need, we've complained in the past about how, what are the rules to whatever the evil thing is going on. So this film does at least set some up, but the fact that they are not good, I think, is the issue here. Like, would you have liked it more or less if it seemed like they could just do anything?
I mean, this will sound stupid, and again, I think it would have worked, this probably might have worked better in a literary, like, they are, I felt like the filmmakers here were hemmed in a sense by the dictates of a movie that they're trying to create. Mm-hmm. So they're probably thinking, we're making a nominally a horror movie. We need to have what are normally included in a horror movie, like these scare, quote unquote, scares, the dead father coming back, make him look kind of creepy, make him sound like a monster. That's the kind of shtick that they're going for. They're like cabined in by the dictates of the genre. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. It's generic. It's cliched. He doesn't look, he looks terrible. Like the effects look stupid.
Yeah, there's nothing in here that's not by the book.
Yeah, and I mean, even outside of the fact that, to me, I don't buy the motive of whatever these aliens are doing. Like, this is really all they have to do. Are these like the lowest level of the alien expedition force?
Yeah, they're, it's like, the alien EPA. They've been over this.
You're the dead dog fucking branch. Like, I think literally at one point he like drops in like a ham sandwich into the sea. Like,
yeah, the aliens love ham sandwiches.
And also, does it make sense? Why is he dropping into the sea and then they have everything fly up into the air?
Yeah, like, I think if the reveal had been at the end that they were aliens and not, oh, halfway through we get that, oh, everything's being sucked up into the sky, so it's not some sea monster as we are previously led to believe.
I mean, it could be a sea monster.
But why is it getting sucked into the sky, then?
Maybe
that's not where,
like,
the sea monsters live.
It blows the air, the sea up, air up. It's also contrived and silly that, like, they could blow up things into the air, but they can't lift up the girl, the niece, for some reason. Like, she's too strong to be lifted up into the air.
Yeah, the rules that they that's set convenient. In place don't make a whole lot of sense.
No.
If you're really like, okay, they can only lift certain things based off of whatever technology they have. Well, why can they do this and not that? Why can they lift a grown adult man but not a child?
Why do they need to go around the rigmarole of like getting someone possessed to then come out here? They could just suck people up from the very outset, right?
No, because they seem to imply that it's only in certain locations that this works, because the dad gets got because he goes out to whatever coordinates in the sea this is. The son doesn't get it until he goes out to those same coordinates.
No, but I mean, that's when they get possessed, right?
Yeah.
But why, but, I mean, why at the same location they possess them, they can't just float them up into space?
That's what they do. Why do they come back out to that place to get pulled up into space?
Why don't they do that at the very outset?
I mean, just pull them from the get-go?
Yeah. Because
they're like, oh, we hear there's dogs around, but there's no dogs out here in the middle of the ocean, so please bring us a dog.
Oh, okay. That's stupid. I mean, I feel like this movie would actually, like, win the Best Picture Award at the Lovecraft Film Festival in Providence, but...
I mean, is that saying a lot, though?
Yeah, I don't got an hour and 45 minutes. I'm willing to waste my time at the festival. when I'm on my off time, don't give me a 2-hour film like this to fucking bullshit through.
Would you have liked it more if it was an actual sea monster? So, like, he has to bring stuff out of the boat and then, you know, tentacles come up and grab him.
I mean, I would probably complain about that also being cliched, but I'd like that more because I would be less stupid looking.
I mean, I do like a film where the twist is aliens, like, knowing the Nicolas Cage film is 99% garbage until the very end. We're like, oh shit, this has been aliens the whole time.
Are you talking about Knowing?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a pretty cool, pretty good done plane sequence.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it's sold on. The spoilers for a 20-year-old Nicolas Cage film, the plane sequence at the beginning, and then the whole world getting destroyed at the end, which is came as quite the surprise.
Explain that being a bad movie to Roger Ebert's Ghost, who gave it 4 stars when it came out.
I mean, as we know, Roger Ebert has impeccable taste.
I mean, I've heard he's the Pulitzer Prize winning film critic.
Oh, well, that means a lot, right?
I mean, we're no Roger. As you can tell, I'm actually a pretty big fan of my boy Ebert.
Mm-hmm. But you do have your whole jaw and are alive.
That's true. And he does, I mean, he makes some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say his dislike of Blue Velvet was a mistake.
Isn't it he have a general dislike for almost all horror films as well?
Yeah, but I mean, he liked Your Knowings, you know?
Uh-huh. But so, I would not say that's a horror film, that's a sci-fi movie. Okay.
Well, now he's getting pedantic. So I would just say, I wondered why this movie had the positive ratings it has. And I guess maybe because people, you know, your movie going, your professional critics, who probably typically don't like horror movies, probably enjoy that this movie is fairly light on both attempted scares and violence.
Mm-hmm.
They probably liked that it was going for something more moody and more, I wouldn't say philosophical, but more like you could read into the intent of it.
Fans of the EPA, I'm sure, gave it 5 stars.
You know, they love bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm.
Although it didn't make the EPA look that great, right?
They didn't solve the mystery. Does this film ultimately have a positive ending if we are to assume that this is the alien EPA who, as the lady says, oh, we're just doing this to help all the fish, which I guess they are, right? So are we to assume the aliens are abducting people and stuff to study them for whatever positive outcome it's going to be?
The fact that they use his dead father's ghost to make fart noises at him to tell him what to do would make me think that maybe the aliens are not having, you know.
I mean, is it a ghost or just manipulating his brain because of whatever they put in him, if for anything they put in him?
Yeah, but I mean, they're still not. Why do they have to scare him?
Can't these aliens be like, oh, I'm going to generate a hallucination of a sexy babe in your mind that's like, oh, hey, bring me a cute puppy out here in the ocean.
Or why does it even have to be a hallucination? Why can't it just be like they just trigger something in his brain that's like, all right, I'm going out to sea. I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I mean, that's the rules in place.
It make me feel like they don't have their best motives in mind based on what I'm seeing on the screen.
Yeah, because they're aliens. They don't know what's going on with people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they have to learn. I guess in the 100th sequel to this movie, once they figured out what makes humans tick, they would have a better way of getting us to do what they wanted.
Yeah, and I don't know. I can't think of another sound that exists as a body of water. But whatever that film being, the sequel to this, it'll be just like a regular guy. He's like, hey, bring me a dog out there. Oh, I learned this from all the other people I've adopted. Now I know how to act with people. It's cool. Don't worry about it.
It gives an extra little point for taking place in Rhode Island, but I would say I was quite disappointed in this movie.
And yeah, I have never been to Block Island. We were going to go there in maybe the fall, and now I feel like I've seen Block Island already, and maybe I don't need to go there.
You should still go.
Should I?
Maybe you'll never come back.
That's true. I might get abducted by aliens.
I mean, how would I know?
Because I just disappeared.
I'll assume if you don't want to do the podcast anymore, that means you've been abducted by aliens.
Yeah, if you stop hearing from me or see any presence of me existing anymore, it was aliens.
Yeah. If only there was a better movie that you had been, your death had been modeled after.
If only.
Yeah. So I would say pass on this one, and I'm disappointed at Netflix and professional reviewers.
I'm a little more forgiving of this, but there are certainly problems.
I would say this is actually a movie that would probably appeal more to a non-horror audience. Because let's see, we've seen Sea Fever, we've seen Cthulhu. I mean, who else has seen the 2007 film Cthulhu except the two of us? I think it's just us. We've seen Cthulhu, we've seen Sea Fever, we've seen The Beach House. Other movies that kind of wade in the same first half of the similar aquatic horror world.
Is Sea Fever the one where it's the teenagers who go to the beach house, or is Sea Fever the one where it's the teenager who's on the boat doing research?
Ask that question again and note where you use the word beach house in asking which movie it was.
What about it?
You said, Beach House is the one where they go to the beach house.
Oh, okay. There's a film called Beach House?
Yeah, it's called The Beach House.
Oh my goodness, there's just too many generic titles.
Sea Fever is the one that's like the Irish one where they're on the...
Yeah.
There's like the parasite that takes over their fucking brain, yeah.
The big jellyfish or whatever.
Yeah. So out of all those aquatic horrors, this one, I'd say I like Cthulhu more than this one, if you can believe it.
I mean, Cthulhu has the interesting take of Cthulhu being involved.
Yeah.
Aliens with questionable purposes.
It also has kind of like a climactic ending.
Yeah, and family drama that matters.
Yeah, this one. Also, I hated the main character. I thought he was a douchebag. At first, you're kind of sympathetic to it, and then you're like, stop fucking up all the time. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's like,
get a job.
Why did my sisters hate me? It's like, well, because you're a dick.
It's also like, what do you do? You don't work. You don't do anything. What are you doing? What the fuck is going on here?
Maybe there's some cut backstory of traumatic past.
Well, they mentioned that his mom died, so after that it was hard for him to do anything, but I don't know what he was doing before that. So, so I would say I'd be interested in what they do after this, because that's kind of an interesting idea, right?
Yeah.
I didn't hate the movie. I was just very disappointed in it, because I was looking forward to it. And I thought the movie was going to be about sirens. I wanted some sexy sirens. No,
I think you want the TV show Sirens.
Are they sexy?
I believe so.
Maybe I do. I'll be back, Derek. I'll be back.
Okay.
All right.
3 seasons later, you'll be back.
Till next time.
Adios.